Silly Birds, you've caught The Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up stories from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. I'm Nikki Ouellette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Today is Monday, January 6th. Today we've got stories on how a potential split in one of the largest religious denominations in the country is expected to play out in Montana, a new internet-based mental health program is garnering positive results, and people in eastern Montana sounded off to the state's largest utilities long-term supply energy plan at meetings last week. A Montana sheriff says the disappearance of a 16-year-old girl at a rest area is looking suspicious in nature. Selena Shelley Not Afraid was last seen last Wednesday afternoon at the eastbound Interstate 90 rest area between Billings and Hardin. A van she'd been traveling in broke down, and Not Afraid walked off into a field while waiting for a relative to pick her and another girl up. A search began that evening. Bighorn County Sheriff Lawrence Bighair said Friday the disappearance is, quote, beginning to look suspicious. One of the largest religious denominations in the United States announced plans on Friday to split over the long-simmering disagreement over LGBTQ inclusion. Yellowstone Public Radio News' Kay Erickson reports the bishop from Mountain West Churches expects most congregations in Montana and Wyoming will remain in the United Methodist Church.
The disagreement over same-sex marriage and ordination of LGBTQ clergy has been brewing within the United Methodist Church for years. The plan announced by church leaders on Friday would allow so-called traditionalist Methodists, those who oppose same-sex marriage and ordination of LGBTQ clergy, to spin off from the denomination. The denomination that remains would restructure its policies under the Book of Discipline to include LGBTQ. Reverend Karen Oliveto is bishop of the Mountain Sky Conference of the Church, which covers Montana and Wyoming.
The protocol that's been developed is an agreement across our theological divisions, and it needs to be accepted by the delegates of General Conference. But what's huge about this is it's the first time there's been such unanimity across the various groups within the denomination.
The plan is not final until it's voted on in May at the denomination's worldwide conference. Churches that oppose same-sex marriage and gay clergy will vote to leave the denomination. Those wishing to remain will not have to vote. Oliveto says she thinks most of the churches in the Mountain Sky Conference will remain in the United Methodist Church.
What's been a strength in our denomination has been our theological diversity. So my hope is that even our more conservative churches wouldn't want to leave, because I think we can find unity in the midst of our diversity.
The separation plan will be voted on at the General Conference of the United Methodist Church, May 5th through the 15th in Minneapolis. I'm Kay Erickson for Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Kalispell Regional Healthcare is facing a second lawsuit over its handling of a data breach last year of up to 130,000 patients' medical and financial information. Court documents allege the hospital is negligent in its IT practices and put patients at risk by not immediately alerting them about the breach. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton reports.
Kalispell Regional Healthcare announced back in October that hackers accessed some patients' private information as early as May of 2019. KRH says it didn't discover the breach until August, and officials took about 2 months to determine which patients were impacted. The latest lawsuit over the breach was filed in U.S. District Court in Missoula on December 24th. It argues the healthcare provider maintained its computer systems in a, quote, reckless manner. It also alleges that KRH failed to properly maintain systems containing patient data and could have discovered the breach much sooner. Like another lawsuit filed in November, plaintiffs say KRH should have immediately alerted all patients as soon as the cyber attack was discovered. By delaying, the lawsuits say it put patients at increased financial risk. One of the plaintiffs in the latest lawsuit says she received fraudulent charges on financial accounts as a result of the breach. Both cases could be certified as class action lawsuits and are seeking compensation for affected patients. KRH declined to provide a new comment on the latest lawsuit, and the Missoula-based law firm representing the two plaintiffs did not return a call for comment in time for this story. Aaron Bolton, Montana Public Radio News.
The tracks in northern Idaho have reopened after a train derailment last Wednesday stranded locomotives and caused a fuel spill in the river. BNSF Railway spokesperson Gus Malonis says the tracks reopened Saturday afternoon after three locomotives and six rail cars derailed in a remote area 10 miles east of Bonners Ferry on the main line. No one was injured. Malonis says crews are still trying to determine how to remove the two locomotives that are still at the scene, including one on the banks and another in the water of the Kootenai River. Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks is holding four public meetings in South Central Montana this month to discuss proposed changes to hunting regulations and seasons for the next 2 years. Yellowstone Public Radio News' intern Aura Wetzel reports.
According to FWP spokesperson Bob Gibson, the biggest proposed change is removing elk shoulder seasons in most areas. Elk shoulder seasons will be replaced with damage hunts, giving private property owners the opportunity to reach out to FWP if they are facing an elk population problem on their property. FWP also plans to create a more liberal deer hunting season to prevent the spread of chronic wasting disease. FWP biologists will be accepting comments on the proposed changes for the 2020 and 2021 hunting seasons at meetings in Roundup, Billings, Red Lodge, and Big Timber. The comment period will go until January 22nd. More information about proposed changes, meeting times, and how to submit comments can be found on our website, ypradio.org. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Aura Wetzel.
A fire destroyed the century-old post office in the tiny eastern Montana town of Ismay, which once changed its name to Joe, Montana. That was part of a Kansas City radio station's publicity stunt when the four-time Super Bowl champion quarterback was traded from the San Francisco 49ers to the Kansas City Chiefs in 1993. Volunteer Fire Chief John Edgel says the fire was reported at shortly after midnight by a neighbor investigating a power outage, apparently caused by the fire. Edgel tells the Billings Gazette the whole department showed up, which comprises the entire population of the town, 20 people. Limited access to therapists, cost, and stigma around mental health can make it difficult for rural Montanans to get the care they need. Now, Bozeman researchers are testing and adapting a new online program that's been shown to sidestep those barriers and reduce depression and anxiety for adults. Rachel Kramer with Yellowstone Public Radio News reports.
Bill Bryan says people living in rural parts of the state face extra hurdles to getting mental health support compared to their urban counterparts. Bryan is the co-founder of the nonprofit organization One Montana, which seeks to bridge gaps between urban and rural Montana.
If you live in Circle, Montana, and you want to see a therapist and you have to go to Billings, that's a long drive, 4 hours or plus, and then you're supposed to go back in a month.
On top of paying for gas and perhaps taking unpaid time off from work is the cost of seeing a therapist, which is generally over $100 an hour without insurance coverage. Bryan says another issue more prevalent in rural parts of the state is the stigma around mental health and the lack of privacy in a small, tight-knit community.
If there was a therapist and I parked my pickup in front of his or her office, everyone knows that's my pickup.
Several years ago, Bryan started working with people at Montana State University to see if a new online program called Thrive could be adjusted for rural Montanans and improve access to mental health care. So far, the results have been encouraging, according to Mark Schur, an assistant professor of community health at MSU. Schur studied Thrive's effectiveness at reducing symptoms of depression and anxiety for nearly 350 adults across Montana. His results were published in the Journal of Medical Internet Research in November. Participants in the study reported significant reductions in symptoms of depression and moderately positive effects on anxiety after 8 weeks with the program. The study found users were also 45% less likely than the control group to experience increased suicidal thoughts.
Are the results just as good or better than somebody who would have access to a therapist?
We're not seeing any difference, so it doesn't seem to matter one way or another.
Some of the participants in the study said a lack of internet connectivity was an issue, but Schur says that will become less of a barrier as better satellite technology moves onto the market. Schur says Thrive shouldn't replace therapists, especially if someone is severely depressed and having suicidal thoughts. But he says it's effective at preventing something from turning into a crisis and helping people who don't have access to mental health services. So how does it work?
I gotta refresh my account.
Schur waits for a video to load on his office computer.
Okay, here we go.
Welcome to Thrive, a program designed to help you improve your emotional well-being. For all of us, life is a path of ups and downs.
Thrive starts with a series of questions.
First one, as you get little interest or pleasure in doing things, feeling down, depressed, or hopeless, trouble falling or staying asleep.
With these, it says not at all, several days, right. More than half the days, nearly every day. So as a severely depressed person, it's nearly every day.
Exactly. So your score.
Based on how you respond, the program gives you a score and walks you through a series of tailored videos. Some of them play out as testimonials from people going through something similar. They provide validation and certain therapeutic techniques to practice in real life. Unlike telehealth, there isn't a live person on the other end. It's all automated and algorithm-based. Shure and other people at MSU have been working to tailor the program, which was developed by a Seattle-based tech company, to feel more relatable to people living in Montana.
What we found when we first started this project is that a lot of the videos were just too urban, people that and settings that just didn't make sense for Montana in general. So we took the time and money to go ahead and replace a number of those example videos.
One of those new videos features Jason, a married 32-year-old veteran who raises cattle and pheasants and grows seed potatoes. The story is based on a real person's experience but has been tweaked to protect his privacy.
You hear about guys going through a crisis buying a new pickup truck. For me, I just ran out of energy. Everything felt like a chore, even the things I used to enjoy.
Further into the video, Jason talks about seeing a doctor because he thought there was something physically wrong with him. He says the doctor suggested doing a rewarding or enjoyable activity every day, even if he didn't feel like it. Jason started making time to fish and hunt again.
I only made it twice that first week, but it gradually became a habit. And it became a new way to tackle my days. My sleep improved, and I felt more energetic.
Shure says Thrive is based on an approach called cognitive behavior therapy.
Basically, it works on the central premise is that our feelings and our thoughts both affect our behaviors, and our behaviors in turn also affect how we feel.
The video about Jason highlights one of Thrive's focus areas, identifying and making time for activities that can boost a person's mood. Other focus areas in the program include tackling negative thinking patterns, constant thoughts like I'm worthless or I fail at everything, and building effective communication skills with friends, family, and colleagues. MSU's Mike Shure says this year his team will be looking at the long-term effects of Thrive and replicate the study with a larger sample of 1,000 adults. Researchers will also be developing a version of Thrive for youth in the state, with a pilot project expected to be ready for the fall. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Hearings across Montana over the last month have given ratepayers of the state's largest electric utility the chance to sound off on the company's 20-year plan for sourcing energy. As Kayla DeRoche reports, many people have lashed out against the fossil fuel-heavy plan, but a minority of supporters in Billings and Colstrip last week stepped up in support.
More than 100 people filled a room in the Billings Public Library for a listening session Thursday about Northwestern Energy's electricity supply resource procurement plan. Roughly 18 people spoke against. Around half that number spoke in support of it. Forester Jeff Herman said people need the cheap, dependable energy that he thinks coal-fired power can provide.
You know, I really believe that this whole war that they're waging is really a war on the poor. People that can't afford to pay their electric bills are going to be hit the worst.
The body that regulates energy in Montana, the Public Service Commission, organized the listening sessions. While the PSC doesn't have the power to reject or accept Northwestern Energy's procurement plan, it does have agency over future projects when the utility wants to put that plan into effect. The 300-page document projects using natural gas as the most efficient and cheapest way to meet peak customer demand. The company says it needs to double its power generation by 2025 to avoid blackouts and purchasing expensive electricity on the open market. The majority of people who spoke at recent state-organized listening sessions in Bozeman, Helena, Missoula, and Lewistown were against Northwestern Energy's procurement plan. Many said it fails to take climate change into consideration and leans too heavily on fossil fuels. But in Billings and Colstrip last week, more than 24 people commented in favor of the plan, arguing it addresses Northwestern's stated need to increase its baseload capacity in a cheap, reliable way. On Saturday, PSC Commissioner Tony O'Donnell of Billings held an unofficial listening session in Colstrip with the help of a community member with coal advocacy group Colstrip United. O'Donnell said this was a chance to hear all perspectives. The gathering in the Colstrip High School auditorium drew around 80 people, many wearing Colstrip United t-shirts. Units 1 and 2 both stopped generating power last week, which set the mood at the meeting where almost 20 people spoke. Rancher Hugh Broaddus aired his anger and sadness in light of the closures.
I watch what's happening here. Like, it's not right. We need this thing here. What a nice little community we've built out here in the middle of nowhere. Good jobs, good people. Everybody forgot about that. Got a little bit of particle in the air that's bothering you. Well, so what?
Colstrip Units 3 and 4 shut down temporarily in 2018 for air pollution violations, forcing Northwestern to buy energy on the open market. While Washington state-based owners in Colstrip are pulling out financially, Northwestern wants to further invest in the plant. In December, a day after the listening session in Helena, Northwestern Energy announced it plans to buy an added 25% stake in the Colstrip Power Plant Unit 4. Colstrip residents are supportive. Jack Standa, who works at the Rosebud Mine, said it's frustrating to feel like Colstrip's future is being dictated from outside of Montana.
I see so many utilities in this country kind of spreading the politically correct words about this transition, but the truth is, if you want affordable, reliable power, it's got to come from baseload generation. So thank you to Northwestern for being honest and saying that.
He said the best way for Northwestern to add baseload power to its portfolio is to increase its ownership in Unit 4. Rancher Courtney Clover talked about how important the power plant has been to keeping his operation going, especially during a hard, snowy winter 2 years ago.
And I am here to say, if I couldn't have plugged those tractors in, I wouldn't be in business today. Because the only way I got those diesel engines to fire up was because I could plug that stuff in. And it went out there and it started every day. I could have kissed this power plant over here because otherwise I've got 200 and 300 cows that are just going to die.
Raymond Loveridge came to the event to speak despite working the graveyard shift at the Rosebud Mine the night before.
We all know that times are changing, but the people that live here are very attached to the environment. And we're aware of changes, but I think we can hopefully transition away rather than be shoved out.
Northwestern Energy, which had representatives in Billings Thursday and Colstrip Saturday, reviews its 20-year plan every 3 years. The deadline to submit public comment on the Northwestern procurement plan passed as of Monday. The PSC will review those comments within the next few months. Northwestern Energy will need the PSC's approval before it purchases an added share of Colstrip 4. It stated the intention to submit its application to do so on or around the end of the month. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on news of the day. I'm Nikki Ouellette, filling in for Jess Sheldahl. Thanks for listening.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark Call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.